The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So hello and welcome to this second talk where I'm giving this week that I'm sharing some stories from that were important for me in my journey through Buddhist practice. And today I want to talk about how important it was that that certain people saw me, that I was felt really seen by them in particular ways. And I had no idea at the time that the way that they were looking upon me and seeing me was having any real lasting impact. Or I think I did not exactly take it for granted, but I maybe was clueless. I didn't understand what was happening with me or didn't have enough self-understanding to really see the impact of these things. But in retrospect, I've come to appreciate that these were turning moments in my life. The first that when I first started going to the San Francisco Zen Center, I'd been practicing. I was living in a college town, an hour or two away, and visiting periodically. And I was kind of practicing Zen meditation every day. And in my social life on campus, I didn't know it at the time exactly, but I was playing social games. I was kind of behaving in ways to and talking about things in order to get people's approval, or have people like me. And so I was trying to present myself in a certain way. And so then I went to the Zen Center, and I continued doing the social selves, what I called social games, social kind of way of presenting myself to try to make an impression. And to my surprise, there was no response. There was no going along with it. There was no picking it up and reinforcing it. And I just was kind of stunned that, and I got to see myself more clearly. I saw what I was doing. And I thought, this is invaluable to have this support, these mirrors to see myself. And that's one of the reasons I went then to live at Zen Center, was to be around people who would mirror what I was doing that I didn't want to do anymore. And then I was there living at Zen Center I'd probably been living there for maybe, been in their community for maybe about 9 months. And a close relative got very sick and maybe was going to die. It didn't end up dying, it's still. But it was quite distressing, concerning. And there was one of the Zen students there who was just another practitioner, was not ordained as a Zen monk yet, and some 20 years later became the abbot of Zen Center. But I was standing in a pathway talking to him about my relative and what was going on. And I'd never experienced someone who looked upon me with such genuine, caring compassion. There was he wasn't trying to exactly fix me or make me feel better or all he really listened and he gazed at, and there was so much compassion in how he was present for me that, I certainly felt at the time, you know, somehow I recognized it and felt it was somehow nice. But that was the beginning, I think, and I look back now at the same kind of capacity, I'm not same, but my own capacity for compassion to be awakened. And the Zen practice kind of really kind of brought it to the fore to become extremely, extremely important. So how he looked upon me was so valuable. And then as I was practicing at the Zen Center and struggling with my kind of human struggles, and I would go see some of the teachers there, and there was ways in which they saw me They didn't give me advice. They didn't try to be my teacher and teach me something. But there was a remarkable way, in retrospect, that they just kind of affirmed me. They kind of appreciated me. They said, good, your practice is good, your things are good. I can't remember how exactly they did that, but I remember that it was very clear that, and I don't think I would have continued practicing or had confidence on my own to keep practicing without this encouragement, this simple way of being seen and recognized of appreciation, or that things were good with me, even though things were hard. It was so good to be seen that way. It kept me, again, practicing. It made it very encouraging to keep doing this practice that in some ways was required quite a bit from me. And then there was this moment where I spent, about 3 years living at the monastery deep in the mountains, where everything was choreographed, not everything, but there was a lot of how you stood, what you did with your hands when you're standing, when you're walking in the meditation hall, you had to walk in a certain way, a lot of bowing, a lot of way of sitting, a lot of way of eating. It's kind of all kind of ritual, choreographed theater, in a sense, of mindfulness, of attention, of really being there. And so what it meant was that there was no choice exercised except to go along with all these ways of being. And I brought a lot of attention, a lot of mindfulness to my experience. But when I left after 3 years, that choreographed way of living was no longer present. And to my surprise, I saw that there was a lot of choice. And even before, I would sit in a chair. I just sat in a chair. But now, if I sat in a chair, I realized there was a lot of choice. The monastery had to sit a certain way. And it wasn't I had to sit that way again, but I saw there was choice. Do I slump? Do I relax back? Do I sit upright? Do I cross my legs? All these little choices that were unconscious before. And I saw my day was filled with choices that I didn't get busy with or stressed by. It was the opposite. It actually allowed me to see how through the day I could find my peace, find my presence, find how to be present in a good way that just felt clear and wasn't giving in to impulses that I didn't really want to live by anymore. So I went to the abbot we had this very formal way in Zen to meet with the abbot. You do a lot of bowing, you have to sit down cross-legged opposite them, each sitting in kind of cross-legged full meditation posture. Maybe knees are about 15 inches apart. So very present, and very formal, very. And I explained this to the abbot, that what it is, all this choice I had. And when I finished, he did something very unusual. He kind of broke out of the pattern of Zen, of Japanese Zen, of bowing, of this formality, how to be, this choreographed way. I explained to him, and he reached his hand forward to shake my hand. It was like this was his way of saying, great, this is really good. That's all he did. And I took it as so kind of encouraging. Oh, this is, I've been approved here. What I've discovered is this is the way to go. And again, this was so supportive to have that. And then the last story, they tell a lot of stories about being seen. But this is one of the valuable things about living in a practice community, at a Buddhist center, to practice among other people and teachers who have been practicing for a long time, is that there's so much happens in the relationship there, that it's in the relationship that so much can happen that maybe is not going to happen in meditation, private meditation for oneself. And so the relational is such an important field of practice. So I'll tell you the last story. So I was practicing, and hopefully this is not, you'll appreciate this. So I went to Thailand for the first time and a little bit stumbled myself into a insight Vipassana retreat. I was a Zen monk in Thailand, and I just had to be there for visa reasons to go back to Japan. And I just went to check out the Vipassana center. And I said, I'm here to kind of learn what you want to do. And the abbot said, and until my visa comes for Japan. And the abbot gave me a little hut on the edge of the monastery over the rice fields. So he said, you go out there, just practice all day long. And he gave me instructions. And every day come to see me. And so I did, and it took me 10 weeks to realize the visa wasn't coming. And for 10 weeks, I waited in the monastery. So those 10 weeks was kind of a accidental Vipassana retreat. The longest I'd ever done a retreat before was for a week. So 10 weeks was a long time. And in somewhere early in that retreat, I had the idea that I was supposed to follow this very strict schedule, maybe because I had been doing Zen practice, of just sitting and walking, practicing all day long, and that's what I should always be doing. And so I was doing that mostly, but then one day I decided to take a break, and I was just walking casually around the monastery, and who should come walking was the abbot. And we were kind of walking perpendicular to each other, and so I was kind of heading towards him, right at him, but he was going 90 degrees the other way. And he was maybe 40 feet away, maybe. And so, you know, it's like, uh-oh, I'm going to get busted. Uh-oh, you know, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. Like in Zen monasteries, you have to follow the schedule strictly. And I thought, oh, now I'm in trouble. And he turned to look at me, turned his eyes, his head towards me, looked at me, and he clearly saw me, that I felt, I saw. But there was something about how he saw me. It was almost like he saw right through me, because he saw me, but there was no judgment, no concern, no unhappiness, no, he didn't flinch, he didn't raise an eyebrow. It was like being seeing fully without anything extra, anything that judgment, any concern, any for or against. And it was remarkable for me to feel, I don't actually know what was going on in his head, but maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe I misunderstood his gaze. But for this very experienced practitioner, Vipassana practitioner, teacher, maybe had the capacity to just see clearly without any judgments, without any bias, any feeling of right and wrong, just see. I was just seen. And that helped free me from myself. To be seen that way is, oh, this is possible. And maybe I can see myself that way too. And that was one of the invaluable things that happened on that first Vipassana retreat. So, to be seen, stories of being seen, and maybe this is not, these kinds of stories are not often talked about in Vipassana because we're often giving instructions of how you can practice. But being seen, being in relationship, and being seen in ways that brings compassion, brings support, brings appreciation, brings affirmation, brings showing the possibility of freedom, which is what the first abbot I had in Thailand showed me by the way that he gazed upon me. So may you be gazed upon with love, may you be seen with love, but don't wait for others to do it. Be sure to do it for yourself. You can do it. I'm sure you can do it, and I'm sure you're worth it. I'm sure you're whole. I'm sure that it'd be wonderful for you to gaze upon yourself kindly, fully. Thank you.